Hey everyone, How Did I Get Here is now on Stitcher, along with 5,000 other shows. You can listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, and WebOS phone. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Got Stitcher? We're on it, so get it! Stitcher's an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now let's get down.
How did I get here? And now here is your host, Tom Nolly.
Well, hello, my friends. I hope this podcast finds you well. I'm your host, Johnny. What's going on out there? That's what I want to know. I want to know what's going on. I cleaned my carpets yesterday. That's pretty exciting. And I also found out over this the last like 5 days or so that if you leave your house, exciting things will happen. I went to a party, ended up going to see a show. I went and played a show, so I had to leave my house for that. But then Saturday, I didn't have a gig. I went to a movie. And I went to go see this band, the Rocket Boys. They're really good. And I'm actually going to have one of the guys on the show this week. So that's badass, right? And then Sunday, I went to brunch, some friends. That was nice. And then yesterday I went to Monkey Shine Mondays, the Charlie Hodge thing. That I don't know if you heard that podcast, but if you did, you know that he has a comedy show and it was really funny. And he has a cool band. I'm drawing a blank on their name, but I want to get in that band at some point in my life. Anyway, so life has been pretty exciting, and I have super clean carpets because I rented a carpet cleaner. So things are going very well for me. And I hope they're going well for you. Listen, quick announcement. If you live in Houston, Skyrocket's going to be playing at the Bronze Peacock Room at the House of Blues this Friday. Friday the 13th, I think is what it is. So come on out if you can. Should be good, right? Maybe. I don't know. I think it's going to be good. I like the Bronze Peacock Room. It's pretty fun. And then we're going to Oklahoma from there, so that'll be a long drive. Pretty damn long drive. My guest today is Josh King from the band Burgess Meredith. They're incredible. My cousin Emily turned me on to them, and I heard them and just flipped out and got you know, tried to get a hold of them, and it took a little while to set this up, but it finally got set up, and Josh came over. We sat down, we talked for a while. It was fantastic, and he turned out to be a really nice guy. I love his music. I love the commitment to what they do, and it's one of my favorite styles of music. It's like, you know, garage pop. Set in a different time almost, but still modern. So I don't really know what that means, but maybe you will. And I guess I'm without further ado, from Burgess Meredith, this is Josh King. Here's some of their music.
So I'm just gonna, I'm just gonna
go straight to the shots.
I'm gonna start with the organ, I think.
Okay.
Like,
so my cousin Emily told me about you and your band, and it's the kind of band that I'm always looking for, because ever since the original kind of 60s, you know, musical mm-hmm. pop bands with melody and cool weird stuff, I've always been looking for that. So I was very, very happy to find Burgess Meredith.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Josh, you might want to come up on that mic a little bit. This is Josh King.
Hi.
You're a perfectly nice fellow. This is the first time I'm meeting you. I'm sorry. I feel like if we just go right into it being very awkward, then it'll slowly.
That sounds like a plan to
go
me.
Into something natural. Your album or EP is called Banana Moon, and is that's your only album, Burgess Meredith, the band?
Yes, it's Burgess Meredith's only release, our first release.
Okay, and so you guys have been together. I saw some video from like 2010. How long have you guys been together?
I guess, I mean, I think it's 2 years or 3 years, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think here exactly. I think it is 3 years. 3 years in terms of, or maybe even longer in terms of like when it took a long time to get everything going. So, and it's rare that I actually go back. That's why I can't answer this overly well, because it takes me a little bit of time to think about. I know that...
You don't just sit around reflecting on your accomplishments on a daily basis.
No.
Then there was that time I started Burgess Meredith. Yeah. Boy, that was a good idea. No, go ahead, sorry.
I met John. I found John on Craigslist, and that was the very beginning of the whole thing. And initially... We started tinkering with stuff, and meeting John was as sort of a incredibly fortunate thing that occurred.
And John is the other songwriter.
John is not the song. He is the multi instrumentalist.
Okay. The trumpet.
Trumpet, keys, okay. Guitar. It's mainly for me guitar playing and adding those sorts of production elements is such a delicate thing, and so. The way the dynamic currently is, not that it'll stay this way or that I think that's something that is, you know, always going to be, but it's Jesse and I primarily have been writing most of the songs, and John brings like the sort of embellishment to them. And so the three of us have been, I think, sort of the core creative force behind the project.
Okay. So it's not like that. Okay. Cause you get the thing when you listen to it, like, is there like a young, for lack of a better word, but you'll understand what I mean. Like, is this like a new John Bryan, you know, kind of guy?
Well, wait.
You know, because there's definitely some beautiful orchestrations and stuff like that. And...
Well, John I met first, and he plays guitar, trumpet, and does all this sort of. I think he has an intense rock and roll element to it. But then moving down the line of how it all came to be, I was playing in a band, the Lemurs, at the time. And I play keys in that band. And I knew Danny, the drummer in that band, who became one of the many drummers who's come in and out of Burgess Meredith because we seem to can't hold on to a drummer very well. His girlfriend, Deidre Gott, we met obviously through Danny and back when I first came to Austin. So she came into the band. And then initially it was me, Deidre, John, and this other girl, Emily, getting together. It took us a long time to find bass and drums. Which finding a drummer kind of came along. We found, we ended up bringing on Kyle Ponder because I was friends with, Mike from Mike and the Moon Pies.
Yeah.
And so then Kyle Ponder and Mike joined up, and Mike was initially, playing some of the more intense guitar parts before John stepped into the role that he's in now. And then we operated as a band where I played acoustic guitar and, we had Mike playing lead guitar, and John really was doing like the bells and whistles at that point. But then we kind of, the having the seven people in the band became something that was difficult. So there's been a lot of iterations, like it took us a long time to come to where we are now and having this current dynamic. I think that, and then, cause then-
feel like you're out of place now? Like this is a, you know, this is a thing, this is a good, cause I mean, it's amazing.
I think that it took a lot to get to where we are now. In terms of, because Austin is very, it's very tricky. It's hard to hold on to musicians, and everybody plays with so many different people. And
yeah,
so it was, it's hard to.
You wanted to have a proper band.
Yeah, but. And it's hard. I should have wrapped my head more around this whole, the whole coming to be of Burgess before even coming over here. Because I'm thinking about it now, and
it's okay, man.
It's been a long process. It's been like 2 years before we actually made an album, and I think that. The reason why we're at the place we're at now is because of all the change and sort of the songs that came in and left. If we would have made a record when we very first started playing together, it would have been completely different. And so then we discovered that we were writing. We had a couple songs that sounded kind of like 60s tunes, and I was like, well, you know, those are the songs that are the most fun to play. And then the project really became about writing the music that we find to be the most fun to take part in. And it's more so, I think, about that, about like just kind of having a good time than it is. Because a lot of times, you know, I'm sure you write as well. And, you know, sometimes music is, you're writing it for like catharsis, or you're writing to like experiment,
right.
You know, experience something or release something. And then with this recently, there has been some of that, but I think a lot of it has just been us trying to like when we sat down and wrote the lyrics to Lovin' Man, Jesse and I, we just wanted it to be fun, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, we were thinking about what would be the lyrics on Hard Day's Night, you know?
Right.
And they're not like overly serious at times.
Right.
They're just kind of like,
you know? It's dead. That's the second song, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very like the whole thing has got like a really like, not in a bad way, but almost like an Archie's, you know?
Yeah.
If you like the Archie's, you'll love this, you know?
It's supposed to just be kind of like fun. Not overly serious, but, There's one serious song. Obviously, I don't want to say that Jesse's songs aren't serious. I feel that way. I feel comfortable saying that my songs.
That's when the other guy's not here, and you're like, yeah, you know, I'm the guy.
but the last song on the record is fairly serious. But for the most part, it's just, you know, trying to write like fun music and just kind of have fun.
It is fun, and it has a really good vibe. And from what the videos I saw that live, it's fun. There's six of you. There's still mm-hmm. six of you.
Yes, there's still six of us.
And the girl sings, she plays some stuff? Or
she plays Glockenspiel and does Ox Percussion with us live. So, like, the official lineup now is, I guess, just to confirm everything that went on, because I never even finished the coming to be, because basically what happened is John came into it, then it was Deidre, me, and John, had a violin player. She ended up leaving. She moved to Iceland, actually. And then we had Mike that was in the band, Mike from Mike and the Moopies. He left. Then Kyle. We had several drummers since Kyle. But then we kind of came to this place where I had piano parts I was writing, and we needed those parts to get executed. And I didn't want to take on the role of playing keys. So that's when I called Jesse. But I think that it was, like, there's sort of monumental stages that occurred for us coming to be. And I think the first thing for me was finding John and finding someone I can really feel comfortable in taking over lead work. And the second was finally coming back around to working with Jesse again. Jesse and I, the other songwriter, I've known him for, I guess almost 10 years. He played with us at the first show I've ever played, that I ever even played.
You mean music ever?
Yeah, ever. And he was there. It was like in Dallas.
Back. Is that where you're from?
Yeah. Okay. Back in, I guess, I don't know, that was about 10 years ago or so. And we've come and crossed paths a lot and always liked each other's music. And I played in his band, Sweetly Morrow, at one point when I first came to Austin. And then we needed someone to step up and play keys. And then we did that. And so initially, Jesse was playing keys on all of my songs. And it was the band consisted of my music primarily. And then one day, he has several projects. And I don't think that... he wasn't getting out all, because he's just constantly writing. He's just a force to be reckoned with in terms of his ability to write songs. And he kept writing all this music, and I think that he just needed another place to send some of those songs. And he allowed me to just basically tap into his catalog of songs.
And so pick some stuff out.
Yeah, so what we do is Jesse presents, you know, all the things that he's writing, and then I have the things that I'm writing, and then we go in and select. So like this record that we chose, it represents us as a very sort of, you know, pop-oriented rock and roll band, which I think you could safely say that we kind of came to that kind of recently. You know, we didn't start out that way. It was slow.
So you're not like one of those pop guys, like, you know what
well,
I mean?
I think that I am. I mean, the truth is that...
No, there's guys that like, that's what they're always moving. Like, I've entered that circle, mm-hmm. you know, with like a sort of like, for lack of a better word, like a Beatlesque,
mm-hmm.
You know, bands like Jellyfish and
yeah, this, definitely.
You know,
I think that there's a desire to be in that realm. I'd love to be like on par with a band like Dr. Dog, who I think is just
absolutely. That's another band like that. Yeah,
just exactly, like just completely incredible. Yeah. And I would love to be for Burgess to be on par with that. And you know, and I think that we're striving to get better every day. But we started out, you know, I think it's funny how you can not be aware of what you're writing. Sometimes it's like you just start writing because you like the chord changes, and then
right.
you realize you're writing something like Fleetwood Mac or something, and you're like, oh, well, not that they, you know, are a bad band, but you're like, I don't want to be writing a song like Fleetwood Mac right now. Why right. am I doing this? But it's just this because I'm playing this progression that, and it's kind of meandering into this place that I don't even realize. So then what we tried to do when we started getting an idea about what we wanted to be was step back and then write songs like that. And that's where Lovin' Man and Me Is In You and the first couple tracks. And I think a lot of the songs we're writing now, we're actually making a conscious effort to be like some of these bands, to try to be like a band like Dr. Dog or any of these bands that are paying homage to Kinks, Zombies, Beatles.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that is what we are now. And the lineup is Jesse and I co-write. John plays guitar and does most of the lead work. And Deidre sings harmony. We have Blue Manjin on bass. And just recently acquired a new drummer, Keith Lowe. And Keith is great.
I love the drumming on the record. Was that one guy? Or
That was our original drummer, Kyle. Kyle Ponder from the Moon Pies. And he played with Leatherbag for a while.
He's a great drummer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's also, like, even, like, bands like the Cardigans and stuff like that, yeah. You know, that you get from, and I don't mean, like, direct influences, but like, you are of the same family tree as these kind of bands, to me.
Well, and I don't know enough about them, but, I mean, obviously, I think that these are bands that I know are successful, and, you know, it would be nice to be, it's nice to be compared to, you know, other bands that have done well for themselves, and right. I mean, it would be great to one day, you know, for all of us to pay our bills with music.
Yeah.
And so I think we're going to keep trying to write music that we think people will like, that we enjoy playing. But it's a tricky thing to navigate, though.
Yeah. In your sets, do you play any covers ever?
We do. We play lots of covers, actually. We should probably. That's been a constant like battle for us trying to like figure out what.
It's tough though because I don't know how much you know about Jellyfish, but Jellyfish like they didn't play them all at the same show, but they, you know, if you went to like a couple of different shows to see them, you would hear like 7 or 8 fucking cover songs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. I didn't know.
And half of a song going into one of their songs.
Yeah, we'll see. And we do that. We've done that same thing. I feel like that's.
I think that's a natural thing for people that play this. You know what I mean? That people that are, and I hate to say it because I mean I don't know. Half of what I do is rooted in that, and I've had to push myself out of stuff like that. So that I could feel like I was moving somewhere else instead of, you know, because you got to kind of still be moving forward. There's people like Dr. Dog and you guys. I mean, you don't sound like you're there or trying to be there. You just sound like you're from there.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. Yeah. And the thing is that I think we do the same thing. We hear songs we like, but then we've been asked to play, you know, we played a couple more corporate events where, you know, that we were offered to come in and play like you need to meet this amount of time and this amount of songs. And it was like, well, we have all these songs that we're writing and we can obviously go in and try to like, you know, force feed them through the creative process. But the easy thing to do when you've got, you know, a couple of weeks to make a set a lot longer is to go learn a bunch of covers. And
that's going to make them happy at the corporate event.
Too. Yeah. Yeah. So we picked up a bunch of songs, just before going to play a show in Fort Worth recently. And some of those made it into regular sets later on. But
so what are the songs?
So the covers that we do are, in the beginning, we always did I Mean Mine.
Okay, that's a good one.
We did that for a real long time. And I've got I love George songs. I think there's something great about going in and finding like some obscure like Beatles tunes and grabbing like some of the George songs.
Yeah.
I love playing his tunes. But and then we did
you know, not like I'm cool or anything, but I have one of my best friends, a guy I'm in a band with, this guy Darren Murphy, you know him?
No.
He's a intense Beatle guy. And he does a George's birthday show every year.
I think Renee talked to me about this last year. It was February 25th, right? Because it's his birthday.
I guess so, yeah.
The only reason I know, it's not that like I'm obsessed.
No.
I just know that my dad has the same birthday as George Harrison.
Okay. Anyway, so I should tell him about you guys.
Because yeah.
I think I did I Mean Mine a couple of years ago or something.
I'd love to.
Maybe I think I did.
I'd love to play an event like that. We had an opportunity to play one last year, but we were just too busy with the release of the record. And it was right in between the completion of the record and the release. And so we didn't have the time to pick up the set.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. So you do I Mean Mine?
We do I Mean Mine. We recently started doing the Ronettes, Be My Baby. And we picked up a Dolly Parton song, actually.
Which one?
Oh, man. I can't even think of the name of it right
Does
now.
Does a dude sing it? Because that would be really
No,
cool.
It's Deidre sings it.
Okay.
It's funny because in our sets, it's called Dolly Song. It's funny. I'm so bad with names of songs. It was put into action by Deidre because Deidre is a gigantic Dolly Parton fan, and she'd been asking and showing me, you know, these early '60s recordings
Oh, yeah.
that Dolly had done that I mean,
and also the song she wrote too. Yeah, it's fucking great.
And I find that there's a very like close bond between what was going on like late 50s, early 60s, doo-wop, rock and roll, and country. I mean, all of that stuff. That's the 1 minor 6 4 5. I mean, it's all the same. You know, like it just whether or not you sing in a country accent and put a pedal steel is like seems to be the fundamental factor.
Right. Wait. Quick aside. So you just are you obviously? And I wanted to ask this about just sort of the structures of the harmonies and the chord changes and stuff. There's some serious. Are you guys like music school guys? Is John a music school guy? Is that what his trip is? Are you?
I went to school. I studied some composition.
Yeah.
Not a lot. I went to a small community college. And then basically did
in Fort Worth.
It's actually located in Plano, Texas, okay. Suburb outside of Dallas. And sure. I went there for the degree they call is commercial music, but it entails like a variety of different options for electives. And I
so did you know when did you know how did you know you were going to do this?
I didn't know.
You didn't. You just were like, ah, that sounds like a cool degree. Well,
I didn't know until I didn't start playing music until I was 19. I was a late bloomer. I think that there's a part of me that wishes that I had spent a lot more time in high school working on music than smoking pot, but apparently, you know, things fall the way they do. But I picked up a guitar when I was 19. I started playing piano when I was 21, and I'm not really great at either.
This is the time whenever I always want to go, no, you're not. No, I'm joking. Go ahead.
Because I'm not, and that's why I really rely on like someone like, I can write the piano structures and sometimes I'll get like some licks in there and I can show it to Jesse and Jesse can embellish.
Right.
I can write some guitar parts and I can show them to John and he can embellish. And then I basically am hanging back there trying to keep up on rhythm and then, you know, add to whatever vocals I can add. But that's mainly, I would say that's a pretty fair assessment of the way that the structure goes. I think I have skills and provide a lot to the band in terms of my ability to help arrange, but I don't think that I'm nearly the player that some of the other people in the band are, which is why I think we've got maybe a good dynamic. And I mean, I would be lost without some of the guys that are in there, you know, helping to make these songs sound as great as they do.
Right. That's always the tough thing to keep in perspective in a band, you know, that you mm-hmm. do need these people and that they need you and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's talk about the record. So where did you do it? You did it here in Austin?
We did. We recorded drums at Public Hi-Fi.
What is that?
It's the, I guess it's Jimmy No Studio.
Spoon
guys own it. And Danny has been taking, Danny Reich, the drummer in the Lemurs, and he has a studio in town called Good Danny's. He really encouraged us to go over there, and basically the Lemurs have been working off and on.
So Jim has like some crazy mic collection and shit and...
Yeah, he's got a really nice room and an incredible console and just...
I think the theme song to my podcast was recorded there.
Really?
Yeah.
It's an awesome place. And so the Lemurs were intermittently working on a full-length record there. They had some drum sounds dialed in. And so Danny... I told him, you know, what we were trying to do, and he suggested that we go over there and basically make a couple modifications to that sound and then kind of get those sounds while we're there. So that's what we did. We got drum sounds at Public Hi-Fi, and then we took those over to Danny's place, and we tracked at and he's got a small, like, B studio, which just operates as a rehearsal room
right.
in his backyard. We did most of the overdubs there and then a lot of the overdubs in his house as
and
well.
And then who mixed it? Danny?
Danny did, yeah. So and
it's
that's
great.
That's all Good Records. Or, I'm sorry, Good Records. That's all Good Danny's.
Okay.
And that's like his sort of home base right there.
Do they love you at Good Records in Dallas?
Well, Jesse's actually signed to Good Records under his solo project, which is Sweetly Morrow.
I know that name.
So that's what he goes by. And he, a lot of the songs, you know, I think that there will probably be a point in time where some of these songs have the Burgess Meredith interpretation of them, as well as the Sweetly Morrow interpretation of them. That hasn't happened yet.
Now, do you play Sweetly Morrow, or is that just Jesse?
That, as of now, it's just a solo project with him. He used to have a full band behind it, and I was one of the several... There were several groups of people that came and backed him up, and I don't know which one I was in, like, in terms of chronologically, but it was one of the later ones. I played with him. I played keys and guitar.
Okay. What about Did all of you guys, do you tour around? I mean, do you go play a lot of places? I saw you play some festivals with those here.
We haven't.
The O-Snap.
We haven't played around too much. We've played Dallas and Fort Worth and Austin mainly. Those are the only places so far. And I think that most of us work 9-to-5 jobs. And we'd like to do some little regional things and get around a bit. We'd have to plan it out in the future and make sure to, you know, get like all the finances in place and whatnot. But
because it does cost, and there's a number of you, you know, there's six of you guys.
Yeah, it's true.
A lot of equipment too, right? So I mean, do you bring a keyboard rig and a guitar rig?
I play and just bring my guitar, and then okay. I've got a and my amp and pedal rig and all that. And Jesse,
and then Jesse's the one with the red keyboard.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, that's the Korg SV1, and we use that basically just primarily to get the Rhodes and Wurlitzer sounds and stuff that we tracked with. We do have piano tones on the record, but we rarely use
piano sucks.
I know, and we really rarely use piano tones from a keyboard.
I found some good ones. I'm in this cover band called Skyrocket with that guy Darren, and I found some good ones in a computer program.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I liked. I had a Motif. Jesse and I both had.
Still not real.
Motif 8s, and it's like. That those were the most tolerable ones for me. They had this mono compressed sound. It was like real chunky and blocky, and it had a real sharp attack to it that resonated well. But since
like on the zombie song, dun 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 dun.
Yeah, yeah. It was. It's very. You know, it's very chunky, super sharp attack, and I liked that tone. But I, as much as I love the SV1, I'm not a huge fan of the actual piano sounds, but I feel like you can't beat the Rhodes tone on there. I mean, yeah. Some of the algorithms they have that actually accompany the noise, like just the noise of the hammer hits.
Uh-huh.
We noticed when we were tracking a real Rhodes versus our samples from the SV1, we noticed some of the same nuances. It was really peculiar.
Yeah. It's weird, huh?
It is. It's awesome. It is this. There's this resonated frequency when you chop on certain chords on a Rhodes that kind of pulse. And this weird thing happens. And I think it's the mechanics inside of the way the keys hit. And it's a real peculiar thing. And you don't notice until you're running it through an amp and maybe you turned up one frequency in terms of EQ. And then you realize that you've brought out this thing that you didn't notice before, you know?
Right.
And we noticed that it was on both because when you get meticulous in the studio and you're like, oh, I've got to fix this. This is some annoying noise that's happening. But then we realized when we went back that it was on both the sampled version and the other. So it was like they were recreating this thing that happens naturally with an actual Rhodes.
Genius.
I'm really impressed with the Korg Wurlitzer and Rhodes tones, but the piano is... I think leaves a little bit to be desired.
I think it's the amount of space that sound takes up, like the way that I have mine open, you know what I mean? There's no way, no matter what, if you're on headphones or if you're putting it in an amp, mm-hmm. it does not take up that much sonic space.
Yeah.
I just don't think that, I think that that's what it is. There's just no way to capture that in a sample.
And there's no way to, just the feel too. I mean,
yeah,
I do. I like the feel of the SV1, but there is definitely something to be said for sitting down at a piano and actually feeling weighted keys. And
yeah,
you know, I mean, it's my favorite way to move and try to, you know, get through ideas and get stuff written. And some of the funnest times I think that we have, like some of the most enjoyable moments of being in a project for me are like, when Jesse and John and myself are, you know, crowded around a piano in a room with acoustic guitars and trying to figure everything out. Because those epiphanies you have when something comes together are like some of the best moments.
Right. So tell me about trying to I mean, obviously, when you went in and you did this record, you guys really nailed something and nailed the sound and vibes, mm-hmm. you know. How hard is it to do? How much can you pull off live? And how much do you have to, you guys rehearse?
We regularly rehearse once a week, or some iteration of the band does. We have pretty intense schedules, so it's not, sometimes we have.
Do you do just vocal rehearsals? Because it seems like somebody's doing something there.
Is
it really good?
We had a moment where we were doing that, and we're trying to get back to it. We have people out of town at the moment. with the summer, there's been a lot of traveling, people going on vacations and tours and things like that. So what we've been doing
because guys are in other bands or
other bands and doing other things, like Deidre's doing merch right now with Shearwater. Okay. Because Danny's playing with them, and so I think they're in Europe right now, and it's given us a chance to work on some other things. And then like Blue goes on tour with the Dolls or with East Cameron Full Core because he plays with them. And then during those times, we try to find other things that we can work on, which a lot of times is vocals or writing or whatever it may be.
So what's your next move? Like, what are you guys writing new songs? Trying to put together some shows? Working on a new record?
We have a couple things to take care of. We raised money for the pressing of the record with a Kickstarter campaign, and we sold.
How did that turn out?
It went well. Yeah, we hit our goal. We didn't set a very high goal, which we try to play it safe. So we raised a couple $1,000s, and then we pressed and bought some merch with that. And one of the rewards that we sold was a Beatles Nielsen show. And so some of our family members in the Dallas-Fort Worth area purchased some of those shows. So we're putting together a set right now of many, many songs of the Beatles and Harry Nielsen. And
awesome. So, what Nielsen songs are you doing?
Well, just recently we were working on Gotta Get Up and Nobody Cares About the Railroad Anymore. Mm-hmm. I think we might do Keith, a new drummer, knows quite a few songs. And we were tinkering with Good Old Desk. I'd like to do that. We've already got down, there's several of them. We already have Cuddly Toy down because that's one of the ones we play as a full band as well.
Oh, that's a good band. Good song too.
Yeah. And then, I'm trying to think, it's so funny. I can never remember them until I can always, I'm thinking about, that. Yeah.
People let me tell you about my best friend.
Yeah. We're not doing that at this point, but that is a great song. I always forget about that song. I noticed that they used it on the preview of that movie, Ted. I don't know if you caught that. I was like, throwing some Nielsen in there.
Oh, yeah.
But they had someone, I think someone re-recorded it. But we're also doing, we have 1941 in the works. There's been a lot of talk about what some of the other songs will be, but right. I mean, for now, that's all that I'm materializing, trying to think about it. And then
what other stuff did you give away in your Kickstarter thing?
We gave away, no one, it's funny, we did, so I thought we had some packages up there that people would for sure buy, but no one bought them. We offered some car washes, and no one went for the car wash. And
But did you guys promise to be in Speedo?
Yeah.
I mean, did you get, was it just, hey, I might show up in trunks?
I feel like there was an insinuation there. Like, I think we legitimately insinuated something, but then we also offered to cook a dinner for people and hang out with them, and then... I guess
no one, weird.
No one wanted
if you to. Give us money, we'll hang out. It's like some sad escort service. Win a date.
We'll come bring you some pot roast and hang out with you. Well, we advertised it though as because Kara, my girlfriend, sang some harmony on the record on one of the songs, Roots and Rockets. And Deidre, who's in the band, the two of them were both, it basically was advertised as the two of them, and they would cook dinner. Because I don't want to speak for everyone in the band, but I mean, I'm not much of a cook myself, so okay. It would have to be one of the other folks doing it.
Do you live with your girlfriend? She nice?
Yeah, she's real nice. That's how I know Emily, is that Emily and Kara worked together a while back at Malaga.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I love Malaga.
And so that's how I met Emily, and Kara sang a couple tracks. Sometimes she helps me out when I'm at home, like trying to figure out stuff, and I'll be like, hey, try this or try that. And she's a good harmony vocalist, and it helps out when I need to just bounce ideas off, yeah. Before you get to that place. The tricky thing about creating is I think that it's kind of a vulnerable place to be, and you take it real personally when things get rejected. And so you want to get like your idea to a certain place before showing it to someone where, yeah. Where they can
say, don't, yeah.
Cause it's like, I feel like I can see a finish line where there is going to be,
yeah.
A great idea or things are going
to, I'm like that too.
And, sorry, and it's like you see, and I'll have the production ideas in my head, and I'll kind of have like what I imagine the different members to be doing, or, and sometimes I'll even have actually worked up certain things. Blue's been really really gracious to, like, you know, allow me to come up with bass lines at times, and he'll step in and play them and then kind of make it his own. But a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of things that are very well in place, but getting to that place requires a lot, and it helps to have these people you can really trust to, you know, help nurture whatever idea you may have so that it can get to the place it needs to be. And I rely on Jesse for that, and Kara helps out with that too. You know, cool. When I'm trying to put together something and I'm not sure if it has the potential to be worth a damn at this point, but you know, still trying to get to that place.
Good. Let me ask you a question about the name, Burgess Meredith.
Yeah.
Do you get a lot of questions? Was that annoying? No. I always want this to not be like a radio interview, but more like just two dudes hanging out.
I understand. Talking about,
you know, your girlfriend. My girlfriend dumped me. You gotta know the truth. Yeah, just a few weeks ago.
That sucks, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it totally sucks. She lived here. Now I've got to get rid of all these paintings and shit.
These are all hers?
We don't hate each other. I mean, we love each other, but it's still a drag.
That is. That sucks.
Yeah.
Well, the name is something that we get asked about. It's definitely not annoying. It's a tricky thing to answer because it's like I have this, like in my head, it makes perfect sense to me. But then like getting that across is sometimes difficult. But I think that, so Burgess Meredith obviously is really well known for his work. I mean, he acted for, I mean, what, almost, you know, a century, three quarters of a century. He was, he'd been doing stuff all the way up to the late 90s from the early 30s. But he's really well known.
And everyone just knows him from Rocky.
Yeah, Rocky and The Penguin. And so, like, for us and for me, I think a lot of it about that when I was a kid, my first exposure to like, make-believe and acting and the fact that what I was watching wasn't real on television is that the reruns of...
Twilight Zone?
Of Batman.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That I was watching. That my dad told me that The Penguin was the same guy that was Mickey. Well, I could assess that it was the same person. He was like, that's Burgess Meredith. Yeah, and I remember learning that and having that association. And for me, even though, like, I guess we all grew up with the songs of the 60s and stuff, and so there's, like, a lot of nostalgia there for me.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so I think that the Burgess Meredith kind of embodied, like, a sense of nostalgia for me personally, but then also in some of the characters that he played and sort of campiness of the Penguin character and the sort of 60s vibe that goes on there and the surf rock, there's a real full circle vibe that I feel like that happens with him. We actually had a funny, we discovered some funny coincidences when we were writing, when we were putting together Me As In You, it became something that obviously is very different than its very base idea when Jesse first came to it, and then we kind of like worked out some ideas and tried some things. And one of the, I'm sure, I don't know if you did pick up on it, but we really wanted to use the rhythmic ideas of the song Taxman to use for Me As In You. So the whole kind of like, you know, it's very much driven from that, even the snare fills that precede the choruses. And so I really, you know, wanted those ideas. And so I basically just lifted the Taxman drum beat.
Yeah.
And I just love that beat so much. And I wanted to have that feel. I think the song itself comes across as something completely different, because as much as you try to be like something, there's going to be all of these ordinary ideas that you have in your head, or these modern sounds, or whatever it may be. It's going to go its own direction. So we really wanted it to sound like Taxman. And then I was researching Taxman, and I did a lot of research on Revolver, actually, in general. Just for production ideas.
I'm not laughing at you. I just, like, I know this drill. Like, me and most of my friends have done the same kind of thing at some point.
And I remember learning that in an interview that Harrison had said Taxman was, for him, influenced by the theme song to the 60s Batman show, which was, you know, Taxman, Batman, you know? So we were Burgess Meredith, you know, named after the guy that played the Penguin, writing a song, trying to utilize ideas from Taxman, who got his ideas from the Surf Rock song. And here we are writing a Surf Rock song, you know, this many years later. It was a weird coincidence. And I remember sending that email out to the band when I was reading that that stuff.
That's wild.
It is.
Have you ever heard this song? I'm trying to think, because do you know Ian Moore? Played guitar and keyboards with him like a few years ago on a tour. And we covered this song that was such a rip off of Taxman, but it was the Bee Gees.
Oh yeah,
it's called In My Own Time.
I don't know that song.
Oh, anyway,
I do like the Bee Gees though.
Yeah, that 60s Bee Gees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not the mid 90s Bee Gees.
I had
into this
in high school. I had my moments with the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. I had that soundtrack.
Yeah, it's funny. What were these moments with him?
Well, no, it's just
sexual. Were you by yourself?
Exactly.
Were there others?
I was in my car, but no. It's funny. I get on these kicks with certain songs. I loved that movie, and I loved the soundtrack to it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is.
It's really weird what they got away with, like in a racial and like homophobic and just anti-gay shit. Like,
oh really?
You remember those gay dudes are like walking home with like their groceries, and they just walk up to him and like knock their shit out of their hand. Go, hey faggot! Hey faggot! I didn't push him around.
And this is in Bee Gees videos?
Oh no, not in the Bee Gees video. I mean Saturday Night Fever. The
movie. Oh yeah. There is. Well, that movie. I think that movie had a lot of incredible social commentary in it that everyone really appreciated.
It's really intense, too.
It is. It was awesome.
I did get one amazing line out of it that I do use all the time.
What's up?
Hey, look out! You almost broke my pussy fingers. That's like, it's just the fact that someone has a pussy finger.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is my specific finger.
And the, he hits my hair.
he hits my hair with a long time on my hair.
A long time.
There's another Burgess Meredith thing you should see if you've never... Have you ever seen the Twilight Zone episode where he just wants to read?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, I love that episode. I always forget the name of it.
I think it's the best episode of the Twilight Zone.
Where he gets locked in the safe.
Yeah.
And then he comes out.
Collects all his books and breaks his glasses.
Yeah, he's like, but there was time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any shows coming up or everyone's gone for the summer? Do you have anything? Any?
We do. I guess only a week or so from now, we're playing at Antone's on the 14th.
Oh, cool.
And then at Red 7 on the 21st.
Okay. Those are Thursdays, right?
No. I think they're Fridays.
Fridays. Shit. I won't be able to go.
Son of a bitch.
No,
that's fine.
So is there anything else that we should cover? Did I miss anything? Say hey to Jesse and John and
yeah, the rest I think
of the gang.
Jesse, just in terms of other things that the family of people involved in Burgess are doing, Jesse's got a project, Sweetly Morrow, that I think folks should check out. And he just had some releases. He's gone on some tours as well, opening for the Polyphonic Spree. And then Blue has two projects, The Dalles and East Cameron Folkcore, which are also good projects as well for people to check out. And
everyone should go out and get Banana Moon. Is it physically available too?
It is. I think it's at, if I'm not mistaken, it's at Innovaneer. And it's at
Waterloo?
I think it's at Waterloo as well. And then also they can always contact us. You know, we can help put them... steer them in the right direction. It's on iTunes and Bandcamp.
You can, when you Google Burgess Meredith, there's like Burgess Meredith and then Burgess Meredith Band in Austin. So just Google Burgess Meredith and you'll know the people.
You can Google Burgess Meredith and throw in the band and there always helps. And then, and they can find us. We have Facebook and Bandcamp and Reverb Nation, all of which have links to the places to get stuff.
Good. All right, so everyone, I highly recommend this album. Thank you so much. I don't normally highly recommend albums. I mean, I don't tell people their albums are terrible by any means when they come to my house. I do when I go to theirs.
Yeah.
Or when they leave in the outro. Just like, oh, fucking people. But no, Burgess Meredith is a great band, and your EP, Banana Moon, 6 amazing songs.
Awesome.
And we'll play a little bit more of one now, and then we'll play a whole one here at the end.
Awesome.
So, Josh King, thank you.
Thank you.
And go see them on July 14th at Antone's.
Yep.
And on July 21st at Red 7.
That's right.
In Austin, Texas. All right. Thank you. I'm not going to lie, I was pretty hungover when I did that. I did. I was, and I might have come off a little too fanny. Like, oh my God, I'm in love with your band. But I totally am. I love Burgess Meredith. What a cool band. Josh is a super cool guy, right? I hope you enjoyed that. I'd like to thank Josh for coming over and doing that. We've been trying to line it up a little bit, and I'd really like to thank my cousin Emily Antonetti for setting it up. She's out there, man. She knows what's going on. She hooks me up. She's helped me set up a couple of interviews with friends of hers. So anyway, I want to thank you for listening, and go buy that Burgess Meredith record, Banana Moon. Do it now on iTunes. While you're on iTunes, subscribe to this podcast, How Did I Get Here, on iTunes. Do that, will you? And then while you're there on the computer, go to Twitter and follow me at Johnny Gowdy. And then while you're there, go to Facebook and like our page. Like, this is just the saddest pushing shit on you people thing I've ever done. Anyway, We talked about this song Loving Man during the interview and the conversation with Josh. I want to thank him again for doing it. Thank you, Emily. And thank you, the listener. I love you. I love you. I love you, Burgess Meredith.